It's your AOC podcast. Legends, sports, and bloody good blokes. No, not just us. We talk to the 22 blokes who are just days away from stepping onto the hallowed turf at the Gabba. Tendulkar on the verge of retirement. Warne, ledge or not ledge. And Viv Richards. What a bloody ledge.
You're a ledge, Ross. You're the ledge.
Ledge.
Okay, it's not just Ross in the house tonight. We've got Joe Harmon brooding in the corner like a cricketing Heathcliff. And then over next to him, we've got Phil Walker, who is Kathy, perhaps, to that Heathcliff. Good morning, or indeed good evening to the both of you.
Good evening.
Good evening, mate.
Let's get cracking straight away and into the Ashes.
Why not?
The theme of today is legends. Let's begin with an Ashes legend, someone who's getting a lot of coverage at the moment, Shane Warne. Fill us in. What is your impression of what Shane's been saying over there down under?
Well, he's given free rein because he was the greatest to say what he wants, and he enjoys that responsibility.
Is he an agent, though, of Lehman and Clark? Is he actually part of a conspiracy?
No, more than any of the rest of them, really.
It's the Aussies.
He shouts loudest.
Yeah. He did criticise Clark at one stage this week. He said he needed to do more to bring about dressing room harmony.
Yeah.
Which was the first time I think I've heard him say anything critical about Clark ever.
Because they're, quote, best friends, he always says.
Well, exactly.
Best friends.
Exactly. Yeah. He decided to even the playing field slightly and said that I think Michael Clark could learn a lesson from George Bailey's captaincy in India. Which, who'd have thought he'd been saying that a year ago?
Yeah, that's an about face, isn't it, really, Warne, because Bailey famously went after him during a match when Warne was mic'd up to the Channel 9 commentators in one of those 2020 Big Bash games.
I didn't know about that. What happened?
Oh, yeah. And Bailey had just been made 2020 captain. This was only last winter. And Warne was nicking him off, basically, and Bailey was struggling a little bit to play Warne, to be fair. And Warne delivered a couple of lines. You'd think that the Aussie 2020 captain would be hitting me out of the park, rather than just nicking me off and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And was quite publicly after that against Bailey. Bailey doesn't fit into the Aussie culture, you know. He's not especially macho. He's
too nice.
He's too nice. He's too articulate. He carries a healthy degree of self-doubt, all of that kind of stuff, you know. And Warne, he doesn't put up with that kind of stuff. And he doesn't put up with weakness in any person because he doesn't recognise it. He's never had any himself.
Yeah. Have you read On Warne by Gideon Hay? Fantastic book.
Yeah.
But consistency
very
is not... Yeah.
Beautifully done.
Consistency isn't a trait that Warne wakes up every morning and thinks, have I been consistent? Is there a path that everybody can rely on?
A lot of media thinks him quite well in that sense.
Yeah,
you can change your opinion so quickly. I mean, he said, I've held my hands up and I've been wrong about George Bailey. But I mean, it's just a perpetual, he'll say the next thing and then the last thing doesn't really matter anymore. And that's the way you can exist and everyone laps it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had his blog, didn't he, where he said who should be playing for Australia.
Yeah, the Warne blueprint.
It'd be interesting how much of that's come true now, actually, because it's always a bit chicken or egg as well, isn't it, with Warne. What he says often happens. And it's not just because it's the right thing, it's perhaps because Warne suggested it and people listen.
Including for England?
Well, Michael Carberry.
Yeah.
That does seem to be the case. I mean, we'll get onto this in a moment. But is he the Mystic Meg of world cricket, Al? Would you say that?
Well, he's probably got the same hit rate of accuracy as Mystic Meg, doesn't he?
I remember her saying once, people who work this week will be lucky too. People who
was
work.
Was she right?
I think she worked, to be fair to her. But, you know, Shane Warne...
Did Meg play with low hands as well? Do you think?
Apparently so. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Is playing with low hands a euphemism?
That's what she said. Listen, what makes a man, Al? What makes a man?
I don't know what makes a man, but the ability to be very confident in one's cricketing ability only works if you're actually good at cricket. And what we're going to be examining in the course of this show is maybe some of those cricketers who said maybe as much as Warne, but weren't able to back it up on the pitch quite as much Shane Warne, because the theme is legends. And before we come on to perhaps those legends in their own lifetime, let's talk about another real legend. The latest edition in the magazine coming up, a perfect storm of legends. Who's on it, Joe?
Well, the big name in there, the big interview we got was Kevin Peterson, which we mentioned last time, but didn't talk about the interview itself, which the magazine will be in shops on the 21st of November. Day before it all kicks off. Phil had a chat with Peterson over half an hour or so, which is rare these days. It's not often that he gives people his time, unless it's Darren Goff on TalkSport, but he did share his time with us, and he said some really interesting things about his top innings, his as he approaches his 100th test, he picked out his five best innings, didn't he, Phil?
Yeah, and I've interviewed him, I think, four times over the years, and they've all, to be honest, been slightly stunted, slightly awkward affairs, and he's always been a bit wary, and I've always been aware of his own wariness. And this time round, he hasn't given a print interview in about 3 years, so it was a bit of a coup to have got him to sit down with us. And then he spoke about the innings that, the matches and innings that defined him over the 99 tests that he's played, with his 100th coming up next week. And I didn't know what to expect from him, and I was a little bit twitchy myself. And he's nervy of the press, to say the least. But once he settled into it, and I wasn't necessarily expecting this, I'm massively warm to him, and I'm not just saying that. And his description, forgetting all the other stuff, forgetting all the Peace and soap opera stuff, leaving all that aside, listening to the man talk about his craft was bloody fascinating. It really was absolutely brilliant. And he described, in particular, one shot he played against Dale Steyn, Headingley, all that stuff going on. One particular shot, a pull shot with a straight back through straight mid-wicket, and he described the moment, the build-up, the shot, the aftermath, as lyrically and poetically as any person I've heard describe a particular sort of stilled moment in a cricket match. And I'm not playing it up here. It was genuinely beautiful to listen to the match. And I was surprised because I'd never really heard that before.
Do you think Peterson is better placed than a lot of what we would describe as incredibly talented players to describe that moment, because he wasn't always considered to be so talented? If you take other equivalents, like, say, for example, Lara, you know, even at age group cricket, this is the guy. Whereas Peterson was anonymous for so much of his career that, is he better placed to describe those moments than his equivalents?
I'm not sure, because I think there are a number of players who develop slightly later. And you're right what you say. I mean, he was a lower order hitter and an off spinner mainly. I just think it's more the way that he looks at the game and looks at himself.
Well, that's, isn't he? So he is so introspective. He's always thinking, and that's part of the reason he's so wary of the press and doesn't trust them. So I think that's, he analyses his game in a way that other people, someone like Ian Bell, not to be cruel, probably goes out there and he just bats because that's what he knows, that's what he does. But actually, I think if you asked him to articulate the shots in the way that Phil asked KP, I think he'd struggle, to be honest.
Yeah.
Do you think, you suggesting, Al, that maybe he's so late on the scene because he spent so much time in lyrical introspection early in his career?
That's very much
just
the case.
Just reading Heaney with his soul.
With KP. We miss you, Heaney.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you subscribe to the New Yorker, Ross, but there's an excellent Heaney translation of some Imagist Italian poetry in there that I can recommend to our listeners.
Anyway, back
that
to sounds KP. Hot.
Yes. Okay, so legend. That's a genuine legend.
Legend, proper legend, we say.
Hi, I'm Vivian Richards, and welcome to the AOC Podblast podcast. Okay?
Okay, so there's a genuine legend, KP. How's about some legends in their own lifetime? This is going to be a provocative little segment.
Ooh,
first of all, because I don't actually know any of these men personally. And I know, particularly in the case of the first one, Joe, you're going to be jumping to his defence quickly. He's Torquay-born, and if that doesn't tip you off, he's a left-hander, played for Warwickshire. It's Roger Tooze, who, after Lara...
This is on the legend section here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is legends. This is,
after Lara had scored 375, he was greeted with a note in the locker room at Warwickshire that said, good luck to Warwickshire's second best left-hander. So well done, Roger Tooze. You're number one on the legends in their own lifetime. Joe, the case for the defence?
He scored loads of runs 1 year, didn't he? That's my defence, really.
I think it was about 2,000.
Carman's defence is that he's got New Zealand blood in him, and he's always biased towards the Kiwis, and Tooze has a kind of tenuous link to New Zealand as well.
He did, yeah.
Well, in playing for them.
He played for them, but he kind of
not that tenuous.
But he wasn't, though, was he?
Yeah. He was as Kiwi as the next man.
He was as Kiwi as Ben Stokes.
It takes Tooze. He's from Torquay, and he likes to Torquay. Go on.
It takes two to tango. So, in all fairness to Roger Toews, on reflection, I think that this quote just might be very funny. I think it's a funny thing to have said to Lara.
I think it shows a commendable degree of self-awareness.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, you're forgiven. Next up, it's a specific example, is Marlon Samuels.
Oh, my man Marlon.
2012, sledging onions. He's a pretty ordinary bowler, says Marlon Samuels. Quote, I don't even eat onions. I don't even use it in my food. 2 points on that. First of all, he doesn't use onions in his food.
Not interested in them. He just doesn't use them.
Not even as a base.
He's just not keen on his onions.
Just doesn't like his onions. He knows his onions.
And surely, rather than I don't even eat onions, he should say I eat onions for breakfast.
Yeah, he could have said that.
That would have been better.
I do eat onions.
I bet Marlon's kicking himself right now for his failure to get that one right.
Yeah, well...
So he really laid into old onions after that game. Is Marlon Samuels a legend in his own lifetime, or is he a ledge?
He's a legend.
He's a proper legend.
A bony, fidey legend.
Okay.
Unquestionable. Way batted here last year was out of this world. And crucially, and the thing that swings it, his favourite player of all time is Nasser Hussain, and worships the ground that Nasser walks on because of Nasser's cover drive. I'm sorry, it's a lineage of great... cover-driven stylist.
Marlon Samuels segues us nicely into the West Indies-India series at the moment, in which he hasn't really scored any runs. The West Indian batting lineup hasn't really scored any runs. It looks like they're going to capitulate in the second game. Anybody got anything to say about Tendulkar? Ed Smith on Crick Info wrote an article, pretty brave piece, saying he's got nothing to say about Tendulkar, that of all the greats... he's got nothing.
I'm prepared to bravely say the same thing. I think
bravely go with one man.
It's a sad end, really. This series. It's not a fitting end. Even I'm almost glad he didn't get a century, because the whole thing would have been kind of so pre-planned that it would have just seemed a little bit of a rank way to finish what's been such a brilliant career. Mm. So I think it was a good. I was glad that it was. Was it Dienerine who got him in the end?
Yeah.
In the part-timer in a crap series, let's just forget about that and remember the good stuff.
Do you think Ali's possibly cast a shadow over his whole career by disappointing a nation and not scoring 100?
Yeah, he's ruined.
He'll never be forgiven.
He's ruined it all. I was wondering the other day, rather cruelly, about the fact that he doesn't get very much stick when all of these ridiculous things happen around him, including his appointment by the ruling party to some sort of political position.
Yeah.
And to what extent, eventually, you just have to look at the guy and go, well, you're letting it happen in your name.
That example particularly, he probably had some part in that. You don't just, oh, shit, am I in that? Someone probably asked him, and he said, that sounds fun. And he's been three times. Fair enough, he's been busy, but I'd be surprised if his attendance increases that much, even when he hasn't got a...
I don't want to get too political, but I'm a fan of an elected upper house as it is. But, you know,
he's sure.
That's a given on the podcast.
Yeah,
that's a given. But, you know, Tendulkar, what did he think his platform would be? What's he saying? And he's not the only cricketing politician. We did a feature last year on various cricketing politicians that have come through, most of whom seem to spend a lot of time doing other things. Like, do you remember Jai Surya spent most of his time as a politician on Indian game shows?
Did he?
Yeah, on the equivalent of Big Brother.
Oh, we talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah. So, I don't know, this whole Tendulkar thing, there is a slight sour taste in the mouth.
Sachin stands for nothing but a kind of cleverly and carefully cultivated sense of dignity and reserve. And that's kind of what he stands for. He doesn't actually really stand for anything. And I haven't read Ed Smith's piece, but I can understand where he's coming from. That, you know, that you scratch away the surface and you just get more surface with Sachin.
But what a surface.
And what a cover drive, for sure. I don't know. I can understand where Joey's coming from, really. It's been a slightly ugly and overblown circus, really, towards the end.
All right. Well, let's move on to something with a bit more zip in it.
Yeah.
We're staying with the West Indies for a moment. We're still talking about legends in their own lifetime. This is a man that I have a lot of sympathy for, Dinesh Ramdin. And I'm talking about the particular incident, same 2012 series, which with hindsight looks like a really classic series. Yeah, Viv, talk now. Nah.
Yeah, great quote. And I liked that bit of jibe from Ramdin. Oh, man. Because you don't hear much from him. Pre that, it was never like Ramdin says this, Ramdin speaks out about
that's
this.
Because yeah. Ramdin hadn't scored a century. He had notes packed down his trousers for years. Yeah. He just never had the opportunity to...
I think at the time, Viv Richards, legend of West Indian cricket, responded that he was relatively hurt by the way that Ramdin had gone about what he did. And what he'd done was sort of unnecessarily hostile. And of course it was unnecessarily hostile, given that Ramdin, who no doubt had a family to feed, only one profession to turn to, and a lot of people relying on him for financial security, was constantly being belittled and undermined by somebody who wasn't even on the pitch, time and time again, like Chinese water torture. Of course it was completely ridiculous for him to hold up a small bit of paper. Utterly outrageous of him to do so. And I too felt for Viv Richards in those circumstances. Poor Viv, I thought. Well, poor Viv.
You can't. I think there's a level of irony in your voice, and I don't like the tone of it. Listen, I think the good thing to say about Ramdin is if people talk too much, given their playing prowess, I think because he said one thing that we remember after a century, he's talked exactly as much as his prowess dictates, and that's what I like about Ramdin.
I mean, Ramdin now, that's it, isn't it? He should have brought out his... after Lara scored 501, he tried to bring out that series of clothing, but was stopped by Levi, famously. And he says he wished he'd scored 502 so he didn't have the intellectual property problem. You know, Ramdin, a new set of clothing, you know, the Yeah Viv Talkner brand.
Yeah,
trainers.
Yeah.
I'd buy them.
The Yeah Viv Talkner medallion.
You look good in those, Alex.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. So,
have we got one more?
How do we feel about Ramdin, generally, on that little escapade?
He doesn't say much, but when he does, it's to the point, and I salute him for it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I took to Twitter, and I took to the various followers of this esteemed programme, and they had a number of suggestions. I'm only going to read two of them because there were only two. The first was Dermot Reeve.
Yes, all over that one.
A legend in his own lifetime. Famously confessed to commentating for Channel 4 whilst under the influence of cocaine.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, what a legend.
He said, quote, "I have no recollection of the ball on Saturday or Sunday. I kept doing Imran Khan impressions off screen."
Well, I remember him doing Imran Khan impressions on screen whilst Imran Khan was standing next to him, looking like he really, really wanted to hurt him. I think it was ad break cut, and probably what followed was rather painful. Although he probably didn't remember it. So.
Well, apparently Kurt, on a separate occasion, Curtly Ambrose was once so provoked by Dermot Reeve that he bowled three beamers at his head.
Yeah.
So was Dermot Reeve? What was it about Dermot Reeve that got under people's skin?
I think it was Dermot Reeve. I think that was
enough. The man himself.
There's some suggestion that having not ever been the most famously talented guy in the world, and having worked really hard and made the most of his talent, to accompany that, instead of like Paul Collingwood with a certain amount of grittiness and down-to-earth wisdom, but to accompany it with the arrogance of a man that was born with a huge amount of talent, it seemed to grate some people some ways. Do you think that's fair?
Well, he had an incredible amount of county achievements over that. He won pretty much everything going, didn't he? I suppose while he didn't make huge waves, except in ODI, in terms of, you could say he didn't make huge waves now either, but he did win a lot domestically.
He's a pioneer, isn't he?
That's the most serious point you've ever made.
That is,
Well,
never a better time after that from Ross, to quote General Douglas MacArthur.
That's a bombshell. Oh, go on.
General Douglas MacArthur said, "Never underestimate a man who overestimates himself."
There you go.
Ooh. And somebody's used that in relation to Dermot Reeve.
I'm going to go away and think about that one.
Yeah, Dermot Reeve's a tosser.
Okay. Well, what a wonderful way to end this segment.
Hi, Stephen Finn here. When I'm not taking wickets, I like nothing more than to listen to the AOC Podblast podcast.
So, and on to England-Australia, the first test warm-up. It's what we've all been waiting for. And what have the warm-up games told us, guys? There's been 150 for Carberry. Will he take his place at the top of the order? Some nice little innings from Joe Root, hundreds for Cook and Trott. But maybe some patchy form from the bowlers. Has anyone stood out for you? Is there anyone willing to take that final bowling test, the test place? Who's it going to be, do you think?
Well, I think it's a tough one. I think it's between Tremlett and Finn. I don't think Rankin's done enough to push himself in there. I think they're desperate desperate to pick Tremlett. I think they want Tremlett to play, but they want Tremlett 4 years ago. I don't think he... Apparently he's bowling at 75 miles an hour in the second warm-up game, which is just... It's just not... It's not quick enough.
It's not fearsome.
So I suspect they'll probably play it safe and go with Tremlett. On the batting front, Carberry's nailed on now. Carberry plays at Brisbane, which is brilliant. I think their top six looks a lot better for it.
Brilliant, yeah.
Whether they had it pre-planned or whether it kind of fell into place because Alistair Cook's bat went, doesn't really matter. It's the top six that looks more formidable than it did with a rookie at six.
We're there now, and he looks absolutely terrific. This is the culmination of Carberry Corner. Finally got him into the team, Al.
That's right, it was us. It wasn't Shane Warne, and it certainly wasn't Carberry himself. I've got a little bit of a tip for those that are travelling out to Australia, including you, Phil Walker.
I might be, mate. Yeah.
I don't know whether you're going to have any free time when you're down under, but I like to keep my finger on the Australian cultural pulse.
Christ.
And if you're out there, and if you fancy an Australian sporting comedy...
Right.
Based on cricket, new in the cinemas, directed by Boyd Hicklin, is Save Your Legs, a cricketing comedy, in the cinemas in Australia at the moment, following the Abbotsford Anglers on their tour of India. And the Sydney Morning Herald says that it's, quote, quite funny.
That sounds documentary.
No, it's comedy.
Oh, okay.
It's a film. Yeah, it's going to be big in Australia.
Kind of outside edge without any real jokes or...
Do you know, when I was trying to think of other cricket comedies, I couldn't think of Outside Edge, I googled Inside Edge.
Oh,
and I was bemused to find that Inside Edge was a membership organisation for people seeking their highest potential in relationships, business, creativity, and spiritual development.
It's fake, right there.
Yeah, so I joined.
To the makeup of the 11s, the 11 legends who are going to step out for the first test, by the way. I'm going to throw a few names at you for Walker and tell me your thoughts. First of all, we've spoken about him before on the show already today, George Bailey.
George Bailey, Bellingham Holds. I love George Bailey. He's Collingwood, obviously. He fits right into that middle order, I suppose. And he's done everything that they could have asked of him. I mentioned him earlier that he doesn't fit the stereotype of an Aussie cricketer, which makes him more appealing for me.
Are you concerned about his average of 18 last season for Tassie?
It was 18 last season and 58 the season before.
Oh, so well done, Ross.
Nice, Ross. Yeah. Not two. There you go.
Bailey's average. they couldn't pick anybody else. And it's funny how it's all swung around now and Dirk Nannes' column, he's out there, he's out in Melbourne at the moment, comes out in the next magazine, and he was saying that for the first time in a long time, everybody is united behind the 12 that they've picked, that nobody's saying, well, hold on, why isn't he playing, and so on. You know, Mitch Jay is in there, and Bailey's in there.
So
and
who are they going to blame when they lose, then? This is it. If everyone's on board, everyone's decided this is the best 11,
Stuart Broad. Although probably still blame Mitchell Johnson. Mitchell Johnson bowling up to sort of 93 mph, at least by the speed gun that the Australians are using. Joe, will he... what sort of games are you going to have?
You never know with Mitch, do you?
Well,
see, I think there's a difference. There's obviously a big difference in ODIs and Test cricket anyway. I think there's a massive difference when it comes to Johnson. I think he's... We've got Mark Butcher as one of our columnists on the website. I was chatting to him earlier. You can read that online at the moment. He was saying Mitch might have done all this in ODIs over the last 6 months, but when he's putting on his white shirt for the Ashes, about to go out of Brisbane, and they've got the Barmy Army kind of taunting him, then it could all easily go wrong. And we all know that when it goes wrong for Super Mitch, it goes wrong pretty badly. So I'm not fearful of him from an England supporter's point of view. I think it's always great when Johnson's playing, whether he's bowling well or badly. It's always top entertainment, probably better entertainment when he's bowling worse, to be honest. But I think it's interesting. They've picked a loose cannon in Johnson, in a sense. And I would like to see England go with Finn, who's not entirely loose cannon, but there's something similar there in that he's fallible. But he takes wickets. And I was saying this to Phil earlier, I think if Broad is bowling like he was maybe a year ago and was going at four and over, three and over, then it's tough to find a place for Finn, because he might go for some runs as well. But if Broad is bowling that tight, I think you can afford to take a risk with Finn. I think it would be a bold, and it would be the right move to have Finn there at Brisbane. And he took wickets there last time round as well. Took, what, six for in the first inning?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Just one thing on Mitchell Johnson. I reckon he'll win Australia a test match, this winner.
Well, he won one last time round as well, didn't he?
Would that be perfect again?
I mean, we've never actually said what your predictions are.
In 2009 as well, The third test, Old Trafford, he was absolutely unplayable one afternoon and he got bail out LBW and he started raking it back into the right-hander from that angle. Once you can get that at that pace, it doesn't matter if you bowl a four ball and over because you're going to knock three or four out. And that's what he did that afternoon. I think that he's a key man for him, really.
Well, it doesn't matter, though, because England have been training against Tymal Mills.
Yes,
who clean bowled Bell. I saw it on.
Did you see that one?
Really? No.
Behind the stumps view, just absolutely rapid. Bell terrible shot. If he can bowl straight in the, like three times in a row, he'll be a serious bowler.
Yeah, how long before he starts getting into England set up then?
Well, he's not on the Essex team for a start. He had a shocking year last year, really. Stats wise, I think he only played four or five times and didn't take many wickets.
Big year, isn't it, really? Big year for him next year.
Okay, well, there's a couple of signings that we're going to chat about in the County Championship in due course. Ooh. But just holding on for a moment with the selections, I think a couple of things have gone under the radar, almost because we've taken them for granted. But, you know, Broad is bowling fantastically, isn't he? Anderson also bowling extremely well. And, you know, Bell, Cook, Peterson, they look in relatively good nick.
Yeah, well, Broad's in the form of his life, isn't he? He bowled beautifully over the summer. I put some money on him before they actually left him and Trott as a double. And I think that Broad, having not really featured last time round, is fit, bowled beautifully towards the back. And to me, the front end of the summer as well against New Zealand, took 7 for 40-odd at Lord's. I think he'd have a good series. I think he'd have a really good series.
Are we just talking the top wicket taker there, Phil?
Yeah. Double, yeah. Ooh. Yeah, 22-1 you get for Trott top. Only for England. Trott runs and Broad wickets.
Sorry,
is it true that Lehman's comments about him being a cheat were considered like ill-judged because they weren't very sporting? But actually, I think they're ill-judged because he's just completely misunderstood how Stuart Broad operates. And Broad, actually, in the interview I've seen with him since he's been in Australia, rather than kind of shirking away from the kind of...
He
absolutely loves it. And he's asking for more. He's saying they're all being a bit nice to me. Why don't you come and give me some proper abuse? And that's what he feeds off. And Australia will be happy to provide that.
So match made in heaven.
Riffing on what it is to be a man, Alex, what's your feeling on Broad's attitude towards a whole nation who are questioning?
I tell you what, I've warmed towards Broad.
Okay.
I was hostile at first because my wife fancies him a lot.
Right.
Wow.
And saw him in the 2020 final a few years ago and was converted to cricket on the basis of a lust for Broad. That immediately got my shackles up from the start. But I listened to the Five Live interview with him. I don't know whether you listened to the Five Live specials with Broad. Vaughan interviewing Broad, which was fascinating. And then him talking about the loss of his stepmother and the Broad appeal. And it was really, really touching and moving. And then afterwards as well, there was a feature on Flower, another Five Live special. During the course of the Five Live special, the general theme with Andy Flower was, my God, this man's prepared. My God, he's doing a lot, etc. So they sat him down in the pub and he had his book, his diary in front of him. And he was being interviewed by Alison Mitchell. And they were saying, you know, crikey, take us through a week of being Andy Flower as coach. You know, this is incredible how well prepared you are and how busy you are. And he's going, yeah, I know. So on Monday, I have a meeting with a player who hasn't been picked. And on Tuesday, I'm at a conference about sporting performance. And on Wednesday, I've got a meeting about selection. And he went through at this sort of pace. And she's going, crikey. And everybody in the studio was going, oh, he's going to a lot of meetings. Phil Tufnell's going, incredible. He went to maybe the fewest meetings that I've ever seen anybody in a profession ever attend.
Born, he
doesn't know he's born
he's
at all.
Guy.
Just Andy Flower has absolutely pulled the wool over the whole hierarchy's eyes. Rehire him. He's at all these meetings, at least 5 meetings a fortnight.
Yeah.
Andy Flower, you know.
Oh, you
that well, guy. You can see I had to give up the ODI stuff.
Yeah, he was absolutely exhausted, wasn't
he?
Do you know what? Andy Flower may be a brave man for his black armband appeal, and he may be an extraordinary talented, but he's lazy. Lord, he's lazy.
Oh, dear. Yeah. You heard it here first.
Talking of lazy, I've been on Ted Dexter's blog. I couldn't help myself.
Is this what we're going to finish?
I don't know why it's lazy, but I went on Ted Dexter's blog.
Yeah.
And Ted Dexter, first of all, this is the reason I like Ted Dexter.
He's done this before, hasn't he?
Go on. Do your Ted Dexter bit.
In the course of his biography online, he names his hobbies as golf, sports watching, and light eating.
Light eating.
Eating
light bulbs. But bunch.
So on TEDx's blog, he's got a very thought-provoking piece on reviewing ODI cricket rules, because obviously there's a bit of controversy at the moment because the batsmen are so on top of the bowlers. And TEDx has always been notorious, mostly because of the stories Atherton's told, for being a bit strange in his ideas. This is, I'm going to run this idea past you, for the reformation of 50-over cricket. He says, limit the number of batsmen a team can have in certain circumstances. So in all circumstances, you can have at least seven batsmen. But if the first batting team lose, for example, only five wickets, the second batting team can only have that seven. And for every extra wicket lost, the batting team who's batting second gains one.
All over it.
So a constantly moving feast. Yeah. You've taken a wicket in the last three overs. Oh no, the other side have only got eight batsmen. You know, that goes, and he says what that's going to do is it's going to make a bowling team much more aggressive.
Your innings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Instead
that's
great for entertainment, isn't it? I mean, that is exactly what we need to bring people back to go over the cricket.
That's the more cricket. Flows of a natural.
So the death will just mean something completely different.
I mean,
you'll want your worst bowler tempting someone with all tosses, but just someone solid just knocking them out.
It will literally be the death. It will be for the last three overs, somebody will simply stand in front of their stumps and block absolutely everything. Orgasmic
empty cheers. Stadium.
Okay, so the reaction to Ted Blexter's, Dexter's so latest... Yeah. Are they related? Who knows? Yeah. He's also, if you got the opportunity to go on Ted Dexter's blog and you were ever concerned about what he says about some selection controversies from the 1963 tour, well, he says his piece. Let me tell you, he says his piece. He's got a few corrections to make for the record.
Siren.
To get on there. Yeah.
Siren.
Fred Truman will be rolling in his grave. Write a reply for Fred Truman. Sadly not. He's passed.
So some of you listeners may or may not know that Phil will be off to the Ashes. So Phil, I just want to know, how does one pack for the Ashes?
Well, I don't know, because I haven't done it yet. And I'm off in 2 days. I take it that I'm going to pack my cricket trousers because I'm playing for the Barmy Army team the first day that I arrive in the Fanatics versus Barmy Army team.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's going to be a real loosener first.
It will. Literally 4 hours. No, 5 hours after I touch down, I'm in there. So... trainers, cricket trousers, and pack a bottle of whiskey and a lot of hope.
That's good.
Do they not have whiskey in Australia?
Not enough. Not enough.
Well, they've got no hope, as far as I'm concerned.
So, Phil Walker goes walkabout in Australia. Look forward to it, listener. We'll be back in between the first and second test to review England's batting collapse and the surprise success of the Australian side at the Gabba. In the meantime, congratulations to John Lewis, age 30. 38, signed by Sussex, where no doubt, having come from Surrey, he'll do a hell of a lot better than anybody would expect.
He's got a big future.
And Siddle, the big man, going to Notts. Congratulations to him, the big vegan.
Good luck, vegan. We wish you no ill will, but we are going to take your ass to town. Goodbye.